the Public Safety Committee to order, and I'm also going to call the roll. President Nagel.
Here.
Councilman Woods.
He's here. Muted.
He's muted.
Sorry about that. Here.
Councilwoman Durham.
Here.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Here.
Pro Tem Hollins.
Here.
Councilwoman Diller.
Here.
Councilman Carter.
Here.
Councilman Smalley.
Here.
Councilman Cartier.
Here.
Councilman Sheldon.
Here.
Councilman Tackett.
Here.
Co-Chairman Bell.
Here.
What's your pleasure on the minutes?
Motion to approve is distributed.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is the update on our departments. And the first one is the Newcastle County Police Department. Chief.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Just to provide an update on our response to this pandemic of COVID-19. I'll break it down just to what we've done so far in terms of communication response, as well as what we are seeing in terms of calls for service and the types of calls for service that we've been dealing with. First and foremost, I would say that communication has been the key from the onset. As a department, we've been using our SmartForce platform to communicate weekly updates from our office, as well as memorandums that we've been passing out or that we've distributed to the police department to make sure that we're informing each of the officers of any policy changes, SOPs, contingency plans, a reminder of our need to be visible in the community during this particular time. We have taken steps to split our command staff. Our command staff right now is divided into two separate teams, Team A and Team B. They work every other day. This way, in the event that one of us contracts COVID-19, it lessens the chances of us exposing other members of the command staff to this virus. We have also allowed and mandated that many of the sworn, non-sworn members of the police department are telecommuting and working from their homes. Thanks to IS, many of them have been given the proper equipment, so we have not seen a reduction in service from those individuals who are working from home. There are some individuals in our non-sworn capacity that have to come in here every once in a while to actually do hands-on work. But those are far and few in between. We have also taken the steps to have our detective unit, criminal investigations unit, all of them are working from their homes. This has worked out actually very well for us, better than what I thought. Officers, detectives are still reaching out to victims of crimes and communicating with them. They're also using this time to get caught up on police, on their investigative reports as well. They are in an on-call capacity so that if we have any issues or any complaints that require criminal investigation involvement, we are able to give them a call and they're able to come in. They, too, are also coming in if required to handle certain investigations or to go through files and things of that nature. But, again, very few times is that happening. Mounted patrol unit. Some of you know have been deployed to the parks, and they're actually patrolling the parklands. We have been using this as an opportunity to engage the public and give them information about social distancing and reminding them of the importance of same. CSU is still operating. They're not going out as much for obvious reasons, but they are still handling quality of life complaints by way of phone. In terms of our personal protective equipment, early on, our department made it a point to quickly outfit our officers with protective equipment, PPE equipment. I think that has played a significant role in the fact that we've only had one officer to date that has tested positive. We were able to get go through some of our supplies from prior incidents such as the Ebola and the H1N1 viruses, where we had a stockpile of masks and protective gowns and things of that nature. So we were able to put together makeshift kits for our officers with the understanding of and guidance of when they should don that protective equipment. So I think I give a lot of credit to our command staff, as well as Lieutenant Unger and Lieutenant Faulkner for making this happen. And Captain Ben Feldman played a critical role from the onset as the patrol commander, making sure that these items were secured for our officers. To date, I'm happy to report that we are doing extremely well in terms of masks. We have an ample supply of surgical, as well as N95 and cloth masks for our entire department. We've also secured eye protection, and as I stated, gowns, gloves, and facial shields. We have a memorandum that went out again to talk about when is the appropriate time for our officers to utilize this equipment, especially the PPE equipment, the N95 mask. What we were finding is there were many calls for service for death investigations, and on a couple of those investigations, we found out that the person was diagnosed and passed away from COVID-19. So we wanted to make sure that officers, when they responded to death investigations or CPR in progress, or complaints where there was a possibility that COVID-19 was present inside that residence, that the officers understood how to put their equipment on properly, as well as when they should put it on. So that, I think, has played a major part in terms of us not having an outbreak like we're seeing with some police departments across this country. We've also provided our officers with sanitizing cleaning agents that they have. Each officer has assigned wipes, sniper, sanitizing agent, along with other wipes, Clorox wipes, that they can use to clean their vehicles when they transport someone. We encourage our officers that on their days off to really do a deep cleaning of their vehicles so that they don't have any kind of contamination inside of them that they can possibly transfer into their residence. Along with instructional videos produced by Lieutenant Unger on the proper way to clean their vehicles and how to put their PPE equipment on, I think, like I said, has played a significant role in our ability to deal with this this virus as of right now. Communication, we give a big thanks to Chief Miller and Recom. They have been very helpful. One of the things that's hard to do, officers, what we found is officers here are CPR in progress, the plane come in, and many times they were rushing to the scene. And for in the beginning, we had some officers who failed to put on their PPE equipment. Recognizing that this was a problem, we asked our Recom if they could put out an hourly reminder to our officers about the importance of wearing their PPE equipment on certain calls for service. And as a result of that, I think we've seen a tremendous drop in that, and officers are wearing the equipment when appropriate. We've also moved to conducting our roll calls via Zoom. Thanks again to Mike Hornicky and his team for setting that up. We no longer have in-person roll calls. We're doing everything. We just started this week. We're doing some of the roll calls via Zoom, the Zoom application. And for taps, I talked to Mike Walsh yesterday and today, and we are going to test out the Zoom feature, and we hope to have our taps reconvene within the next 2 weeks, and we'll make it open to everyone to join us with that so that we can still focus on what the issues are in the community and determine ways that we can deal with those problems and issues that arise. In terms of safety measures within the police department, our number one goal as a command staff has been to stay abreast of the CDC guidelines. We are putting out information on Smart Force, where we're educating officers about the precautions that are coming, the recommended precautions that are given to us by the experts. Again, we think that that has played a significant role in our ability to avoid having staffing issues related to COVID-19. We are also right now started our FTO program, and our officers are riding with field training officers. Our rookie officers are riding with field training officers, and we mandate that they are taking the temperatures of both of these individuals in the car to ensure that no one is sick and that they're safe to ride together. We've also established a very strong partnership with the Department of Public Health, Diane Hainsworth and Brittany Huss. Both of them have been instrumental in getting us testing for those officers that were possibly exposed. At the beginning, what was happening was testing was going through private labs, and it would take quite a bit of time for that, the results to come back to us. But through the Department of Public Health, we've been able to get these testings done and sent to the state lab, which has given us a faster turnaround period. So we're very grateful for that. We have postponed all of our training except for the critical training. Critical training meaning things such as the range qualifications, but all other training has been either postponed or will be moved over to a platform such as Zoom. We are not only concerned about our officers' actions and social distancing on duty, but we're also pushing out the message that officers have to be cognizant of that while they're off duty. So we're asking officers that when they're off duty to make sure that they are staying, abiding by the governor's mandates, that we're, staying within our homes and limiting our contact with other individuals. Again, for obvious reasons, if someone gets it, we have anyone infected here, the possibility of others being infected. We have also teleserve more complaints to, again, limit the exposure that our officers may have. RECOM has done a great job, again, with asking screening questions of individuals that call so that we're able to determine whether or not, this person may be possibly a risk for COVID-19. In addition, they're asking complainants to exit their homes and to meet the officers outside. I believe that's also been a great assistance to us. In terms of staffing, we're happy to report that we have not had any significant issues at all with staffing at all. As it stands right now, we do have 4 officers who are quarantined. They are not exhibiting any signs of COVID-19. 3 of them were possibly from on-the-job exposures, and 1 was an off non-work-related possible exposure. So, like I said, staffing hasn't been an issue. We did have 1 officer who tested positive last week. That officer, I'm happy to report, is doing extremely well. I spoke with him, and he described it as just having a very bad case of the flu. So we were planning on having another class that will start, academy class that will start June 22nd, but obviously that is going to be pushed back. We currently have 388 officers. That includes the 3 recruits that we have that are working with us right now that's going to be in the next police academy. Lastly, I move into our numbers. Thus far, we have not seen significant increases in our categories. Domestic calls for service have gone up about 18% for the first 2 weeks of this April compared to last year. So we have seen an increase in domestic calls, and I think that's something that majority of police departments across the country are reporting. 911 calls for service have settled down. We had an increase. We were using, Mike Walsh was using a baseline of 3, March 2nd, 2020 through March 8th, 2020 as a baseline. And then So we have pre-COVID, COVID-19 post. And so we're looking at those numbers. And overall, we're doing extremely well. The one thing that we have seen a significant decrease, and then part of it is because of the mandate. We have not had a lot of officer-initiated car stops, pedestrian stops. We're asking officers to use their discretion. Obviously, if they see a crime taking place, they're going to take action with that. But many of the stops that we were making before, we're simply not making them. This is the time when I think, given the concerns of the community, that we as a police department have to be visible. We are asking our officers to make sure that they have a presence in our communities. We can see from the number of people who have lined up to purchase firearms that they have a concern. And so right now is a time that we don't need to be making car stops on Route 13 or Route 40. We need to be riding through these neighborhoods and making sure that people see us so that we can provide some sense of security to those individuals that live in those communities. So aggravated assaults, we're not seeing. We're seeing an uptick of 2 compared to our baseline. We're down compared to last year. And aggravated assaults are the shootings and the TBH or threatening calls or complaints for service. So overall, we're doing extremely well. We're going to continue to monitor the situation and we'll make adjustments. We have a contingency plan in place in the event that we are stricken with officers being diagnosed with COVID-19. And the contingency plan is quite simple. We've all made all the inside personnel aware to be ready that if we have to backfill the patrol division, we will reach out to them and use them in that capacity. And I think that's all I have. I'll take any questions. Yes, sir. Councilman Cardia.
Thank you, Colonel Bond. I wanted to ask about the officers that are quarantined. Have we been able to test them for COVID?
No. In some cases, unless what the mandate was with the Department of Public Health is if an officer is not showing any symptoms or signs of COVID-19, they are not doing testing. What they're asking is that those officers remain off and we monitor them for a period of 14 days. So in some cases, we have not, there's been a question. People have said that, oh, I think I might have it, or I traveled to New York. And so as a result, we put people on this out of an abundance of caution. We have put them and placed them in a quarantine status until either A, we can determine whether or not the person was actually is actually COVID-19, because we have a lot of individuals who are using that right now when they come into contact with police officers. And two, if they're not, I lost my train of thought. I forgot what my second point was going to be. But no, they have not been tested. Now, we did have the one officer who was tested, and like I said, that officer did test positive. Now, and in that case there, what we did was we went back and we traced all the other officers that officer had contact with, and we communicated with Department of Public Health, ran by them the situation, the nature of the contact, and the direction that was given to us was they were not going to test those officers, but what they wanted us to do was quarantine them and monitor them, and then we would when they come back, you know, there was some information, paperwork they would have to fill out, and then they will be able to come back in to work.
One last follow-up to that. Are they able to perform any sort of administrative duties while they're in quarantine? Because obviously they're not on patrol or out encountering the other members of the police force or the public. So I just want to know if they were able to do any other useful administrative work for the department.
No, if they're off on a quarantine, then we want them to relax. They are not doing any additional work. We do have enough officers who are working from home that if there was any other functions that needed to be performed, we could get it done through those other officers.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're muted. You're muted.
Chief, given what's going on in the prison system, are we doing anything different in the lockup?
Yeah, in our turnkey area, that is one of the areas that we really, I forgot to mention that we purchased a machine called the Halo Silver machine, which is a machine used in a lot of the hospitals to sanitize areas, workstations, and things of that nature. So we purchased two of them early on. Our turnkey area, because it is highly transient, we have used it down there in order to clean and decontaminate that. That area also receives additional attention from our janitorial staff that comes in and works each weekend to make sure that that place is clean. What we have asked is that our officers do their best to avoid bringing back individuals and making arrests. If we don't have to bring someone back, please find another way to address the situation. If there's going to be a summons or something like that, but we try our best to limit. And our booking numbers actually are down. I had a number. Okay, so our booking numbers are down 44% when compared to the baseline week. So we have less people coming back there, and that's the one way that we can try to make sure that the officers back there are protected from the individuals they come into contact with.
Okay, Chief, this would be my final, but you talk about domestic violence, but statistics from other jurisdictions and across the country and other similar kind of situations show that there's not only an increase in domestic abuse, but also in child abuse. And I trust that we're looking out for that and considering that as we deal with situations.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the Division of Family Services, I believe, they're putting out some information to remind people, because as we all know, most of the child abuse cases that come to our attention come by way of schools reporting these incidents. And now with school being out, one of the things that Division of Family Services is doing is putting out information that will be helpful, reminding people to be vigilant, to watch, and if they suspect child abuse, to make sure that they're calling the authorities and reporting it.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Any questions, any other questions or comments from members of council? Seeing none, thank you very much, Chief.
Thanks, sir.
And the next update will be from our communication division. Chief. Is he muted?
He doesn't show muted. It went off, but I still can't hear him. Now he's muted.
Yep.
Yeah, he is muted.
Still can't hear him. He's off the mute.
Right. Help is coming.
We can have the chief call in on the phone as well if you want. If somebody wants to send him the phone number and the access code, and then we can come back to him, and he can watch on the screen while he talks to us on the phone.
Working on it.
He says, Jeff says, move on to EMS and they'll figure it out.
Very good. We'll move on to EMS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Logeman, Acting Chief of EMS. So obviously this pandemic has presented quite a challenge to the medical community. We've been working very closely, really hand in hand on a daily basis with the State Division of Public Health. They've provided excellent guidance on the proper way for our personnel to respond, the proper personal protective equipment, or the term everybody uses is PPE. Also, some subtle changes to the way in which we treat patients. One of the big concerns when you have a patient who is positive for COVID-19 is to watch out for procedures that cause aerosolization. And in the medical field, there's many that do that. You're familiar with nebulizers that asthma patients utilize. The intubation, where we put the breathing tube in and ventilate, and CPAP, which is similar to the device people wear when they sleep, but at a much higher rate of volume. So those are some procedures that we do perform that we're using extra caution on, and making sure we're using the highest level of PPE. So we've put out to our personnel what to wear, and as along lines of PPE, and when to do so. We're certainly, most people probably have heard that it's become very difficult to acquire the PPE supplies from outside vendors. We've exhausted initially most of that. We have made requests to the SHOC, which is the state health, the state operations health center. And we were able to get, at this point, two deliveries of PPE from them, which has been extremely helpful. We do have one of our lieutenants whose full-time job, Lieutenant Michael Nichols, his full-time job is to monitor our PPE, make sure all of our personnel have the appropriate PPE, and we're calculating our daily burn rate and forecasting our future needs. Right now, I'm pretty confident in our supply for the near future. But I think, as we all know, this is not something that's going to be done within the next week or two. So we're looking into the future, continuously looking for sources and communicating with the state along the lines of the PPE. I will say that surprisingly, as of continuing into today, I should say, our call volume has been decreased. It's kind of contrary to what you would believe. I can tell you that on the average, paramedics in Newcastle County respond on about 108 incidents per day. And it's been on a slow decline. And as of April 12th is the last data I have, we went on 68 calls. And if we look globally at EMS calls period in Newcastle County, the average daily is about 263. This accounts for all calls for EMS service. And as of the 12th, it was in the area of 190. As I've had the opportunity to do visiting the ERs briefly and going through the parking lots and discussing this with people, the whole COVID-19 situation with hospital personnel, their censuses are down. They've obviously cleared out hospitals, canceled the elective procedures, but even with that, they have not yet seen the volume. They're obviously it's coming up slightly, but they have not seen the volume. We're closely monitoring our call volume to see if, obviously that would be an indication if we're seeing a lot of sick people coming through the system. So staffing, Colonel Bond mentioned staffing. Staffing from the outset was a concern for us because our personnel are coming in close contact with people infected with COVID-19. Obviously we're practicing, we're utilizing the best practices for PPE. However, I can tell you that we have had on a rotating basis people that have been out of work due to contact with COVID patients, and on the advice of the Division of Public Health, they have been out of work and rotating them back into work. So I can tell you as of right now, we do have 11 paramedics who are not eligible to work due to potential contact with COVID-19. We keep close tabs on that and rotate them back into the rotation as we can. I can tell you that we have had some people, I know many people have heard of the incident in Claymont that put a number of Claymont firefighters into isolation. That also affected some of our personnel. We have been able to get antibody testing. People have heard of this rapid blood test, which involves a pretty significant finger stick, more than just say a diabetic checking their blood sugar. But with that, it looks similar to a pregnancy test. You put the blood on there, add some dilutant, and in 15 minutes you can determine whether or not you developed antibodies to COVID. So when we have now this goes for a provider who had the potential exposure, who is asymptomatic, so no symptoms. If no symptoms, you can't get the nasal swab test. So you wait 7-8 days out, you get the antibody test. They have all come back negative, and then those employees are returning to work per public health, and with the condition they just wear a surgical mask. So we're happy that in total we've had 4 employees return through that process. So talking about staffing. So right now we run the 2-2-4 schedule, 2 days, 2 nights, 4 days off, based on having 4 platoons of paramedics. One of the concerns we had is we get quite a large number of paramedics that become ill or can't report due to potential exposures that we would not be able to operate under that schedule. So we have developed the ability to switch over to a 24-hour on, 48-hour off schedule if need be. We're not there, or we're not close to being there yet. However, doing that, we could operate off of 3 platoons. It's much longer hours that I would rather our personnel not have to work. However, if we need to work through that, we're going to have to work through that. And we have that lined up, and we could flip the switch, so to speak, if we needed to. We have it all lined up in our scheduling software where if we need to move to that, we could move to that. Another contingency we looked at is even after we switch to that 24-hour on, 48-hour off schedule, if we still lost personnel, which even made it difficult to run that, we've had discussion with medical direction through public health that we may even have to run one paramedic on a unit. That's obviously our fallback that we're hoping not to reach. And at this point, we're not even close to changing the hours, let alone our how we operate. But just to give you an idea that we have planned for that, and we are prepared to fall back to that if need be. It's been a little bit since you've had a update on the Paramedic Academy. I'm glad to tell you that the first half of the class finished testing last week. All the final testing through Good Fellowship, which is the training facility, was done. They took the National Registry of EMT's paramedic exam. We had a 100% success rate on that. So all 9 of those recruits are now released from the Good Fellowship program. They're in our hands. They're in earnest doing the field training program on our units. The second half, they had to be split in half in order to get them through all this testing. The second half is finishing their testing this week. They will be taking the written National Registry Friday or Saturday. Looking forward to getting them released from Good Fellowship and on the street with us beginning next week. One little caveat on that is with the national testing, there's a written test and there's a practical test. All of the practical testings very early on in this COVID-19 situation were canceled. So all of these people are getting a conditional certification from the National Registry, and then once possible to restart the practical exams, they'll be tested in the practical manner. And that's about all I have available for any questions.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments from members of council? Seeing none, hearing none, we'll see if we can go back to Chief Miller.
Now we're fixed. Everybody hear me?
Yes.
All
right.
Yes.
I had to mute my current situation, so hold on 1 second. Okay, somebody has questions. Okay, here we go. I have a, I'm going to share my screen with you and just go some objects for bullet points. And that's, so staffing we're going to cover, and then what we have done to prepare for the coronavirus. Current staffing, our fourth annual Citizens Telecommunicator Academy is going to be on hold until we get past this. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that this week, just starting yesterday, is National Telecommunicators Week. So we'll have a, it's not going to be as a norm where we all gather and share food. We'll wait and do that at a later time. But we do have some gift items for our telecommunicators that will be handed out during the week, and a letter of thanks from myself for their services. If you remember, in January, I reported on our staffing that we were 14 vacancies from the March 19 until we got to the January reporting. When we got to January reporting, we were down 10 people at that time, and we had 4 hires since this past January that are in place. And in addition to that, we have another 5 that are waiting in the wings. And again, this issue with the COVID-19 has caused us some delay in processing the new hires. But again, shout out to Colonel Bond and his crew for working diligently in getting the backgrounds and the fingerprint processing done. But we still have some hurdles that are outside of New Castle County's government that we have to get through for like PIVOT and getting them tested and doing other portions of the hiring process. March 18th, our state medical director authorized to use us what's an emerging infection disease surveillance tool. We call it EIDS on all EMS calls. It helps to identify people who are higher risk of to exposure of COVID-19. So at that time, we began that on March 18th. And over the, since March 18th, there's been 3 different updates. There was originally from the questions that were asked of the caller and their response. We were over responding Chief Logerman's team. We were over ALS responding, and that was statewide. So we got on a conference call, made a couple adjustments to ensure that the caller still gets the highest level of service, but we're not wrongly utilizing our ALS teams. March 27th, we on our own decided, as you heard the colonel say, we're doing questioning and we're trying to give the police heads up. So we decided to use the EIDS tool on all callers for all types of call service. And that was on March 27th. So the questions that we do ask is travel and patient contact history. Have they traveled in the last 14 days? If so, where? We're probably going to do away with that one because we have enough COVID-19 in Delaware now, the travel really isn't an issue in asking questions. Contact with someone with flu-like illness, if so, when? And if you did have contact with that person, were you able to use PPE? The next we have now coming to the following symptoms. If the caller says they have a fever of 99.5 or above and they know it, or if they have chills, difficulty breathing, persistent cough, any new respiratory problems, a persistent sneezing, wheezing, or congestion, we will advise the callers that this caller is a to use caution, that they have met at least 2 or 3 of the COVID-19 criteria questioning, and we won't use COVID-19 over the radio unless the actual patient tells us so over the phone. We will use caution EIDS. tool proves positive. We were also tasked with identifying a contingency, as the Colonel and Mark both mentioned. So the four major topics were to ensure health and wellness of our communications personnel, maintain staffing that's consistent with calls for service, identify threats to our service level, and identify call handling alternatives, or if we should have to evacuate the communications center to have it deconned. Ensuring the health and wellness of our personnel. The command staff is telecommuting. We have six command staff. They are cut in half. And the effort there is one half comes in on Monday, the other half comes on Tuesday, and vice versa. That way, if anyone is sick or is having any exposure, A, they're not in the room as often. We try to limit anybody's exposure into the 911 center. The center is closed to all non-essential visitors. Temperature taking of all personnel began about 4 or 5 weeks ago at the start of each shift. And if anyone's 99.5 or higher, they are excused. And we have policies in play countywide of how to contact your primary care and then go from there. And you would have to be fever free for 72 hours to return to the 911 center. We've incorporated disinfecting wipes and mandate that at each shift change, before they begin their work, they completely wipe down their consoles with a Clorox hydrogen peroxide mixture type wipe, and that kills the COVID-19 on contact within 1 minute, as opposed to several minutes it takes for the normal Clorox wipe. Hand sanitizers at each work area and hand sanitizers at the entrance to each shift. Maintaining staffing consistent for handling calls for service, that we made sure that the employees and the union that we would exercise our right to prevent or to discontinue any or all previous approved vacations as necessary to assist with staffing levels should someone become in contact or the COVID-19 should overwhelm the capabilities. I'm not going to read all these to you, but identifying threats to our service level, the one thing we focused on, and it's completely arbitrary, we said if 40% of our workforce could not come to work because of this, we understand that we would have to change our shift, and we would probably change our shift to 18-hour days with the personnel that we would have remaining. And they would either be working one on, one off, or potentially one on, three off, or two off. We would have to figure that out, depending on how many people we have left. Additionally, the other PSAPs throughout the state could handle some of our overflow, meaning if we have five or six call takers, we could program our system to say, maybe calls 7, 8, and 9 should go to Kent County, but we can only pick one center. We can't manage that load throughout all the other 911 centers. We have to pick just one to go to, and then we would have to be sure that they have the staffing adequate to handle that as well. And if those items there became exhausted, we have what's a tri-state partner or a technical response team, or a TRT, so we could start looking. These are certified individuals that know how to work with other user agency systems. So we could reach out to our other states, but again, that depends on what their availability of personnel is as well. So I think I just mentioned that we can move some of our call load, but being the largest 911 center, taking more than 52% of the overall calls in Delaware, there is no one center that can handle all of our call volume. And to be quite honest with you, if we did load all of our call volume to the other seven centers throughout the state, they probably would have longer call wait time for our customers to be answered. Monday, April the 13th at 3 a.m., yesterday morning, we did determine that we were going to do a deep clean. So we partnered with ServPro. We were about 4 to 5 days in advance with us working with ServPro. They really helped us out greatly. We had a lot of different ideas, but basically we took our alternate plan and put it into play. We've had six people that have either been in self-isolation or ordered to quarantine after reporting to risk management what their exposure was, and that created some concerns for the 911 center. Some other precautionary measures we have taken is no one's allowed in the 911 center unless they're a 911 employee, other than the commanding officer of either EMS or the police department. And they have to be in uniform to come into the room, and they have to be working on shift at the same time. Because in all reality, almost anything that they would need to communicate with any of the supervisors could be done by phone. As you heard the colonel say, we're trying to keep the officers distant. We're asking the callers to go outside and meet with the officers rather than have the officer come inside. We are in the very early stages of beta testing. We've been beta testing video to 911 for several months now. However, we've reached back out to raise mobile safety, and they're the same people that give us smart 911 and panic button. We asked them if they could develop a secure portal so that we could get our field responders to get in communications with anyone that has a portable device. And then that way they could have a visual chat with them, be it a police officer or BLS or EMS, ALS field responder. That way they could talk and potentially video assess the situation to see if they really have to go in or not. Some pictures of what yesterday morning looked like. In the center area there, you'll see three command posts. We use Delaware State Police command posts. The center black one there is ours. And then Kent County came up with theirs. So again, very well orchestrated, and we couldn't have done that, any of this, without our additional partners. Here's something we've never seen completed since the day we've moved in, is the 911 center with no one working in it. Those consoles you see right there are the consoles that all the 911 call takers sit at. The decontamination team came in, they worked on each and every console. And the way they did it is they came in and sprayed their product onto the console, the carpets, everything that could be touched, walked on, the windows, the doorways, the door handles. They did our bathrooms, our offices, and our EOC was done from top to bottom, and our break room was done as well. So they were very diligent. They also did the staircase coming in, the staircase coming in from front and back of the building. And they did the police department's public information center out in the front. And that's all I have for now, unless anybody has any questions.
Questions or comments from members of council? Seeing none, hearing none. Is there anything, any comments? I'm sorry, Councilman Cartier.
So you, Chief Miller, you're reporting that you did have some members of the 911 staff who had some exposure to COVID or potentially, and they were quarantined?
Yes, we've had six that were either told to self-isolate or quarantine for anywhere up to 14 days, depending on what their circumstances were. And we basically turn that decision-making over to risk management. And they sometimes even reach out to pivot to ask questions as well.
So you're able, with those individuals being quarantined, to maintain the current scheduling you have at the 911 center?
Yeah, so I believe Colonel Bond did say that, you know, his complaint load is down, and we see that as well. I can tell you that yesterday's complaint load, luckily for us, because that was the morning we vacated the center, we were down 300 calls compared to a normal day and compared to the previous Monday. But in the last 2 weeks, it's been on average between 200 and 250 calls down per day. Now, Chief Logerman's probably going to tell you he's busier, and we see that as the same. The BLS runs are down, but the EMS runs are down, but the ones that require ALS attention, you know, our paramedic group, those have increased. So everything seems to be coming in line with that.
So if you were having the NOMA call volume, after you have all these members of your staff quarantined, is that, does that become a problem for you?
If I went to what, I'm sorry?
Normal call volume, or we had a spike.
Currently right now, I think I can tell you yesterday with 300 less calls, our 90% threshold increased to 98%. So I think we're holding our own right now with the six that are out. But again, you know, 40% is 20 people. So, you know, as people continue to, you know, get into self-isolation situation or a quarantine, it would seriously affect our ability to provide the same level of service we do today to our customers. However, we're prepared to change shifts and do things to accommodate to have more people on. Again, that's more people working more hours and having less time off. And that becomes problematic for the individual as well.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Are there any comments from members of the public?
Councilman Street, I don't see any.
With that, Councilman Smiles.
We have Mr. Carpenter for emergency management waiting in the wings.
Okay, I'm going to go to Councilman Bell first.
I'll yield to our emergency management coordinator for right now. Please, sir.
Dave?
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate it. Good afternoon, everyone. So back in late January is when Public Health and DEMA reached out to us to begin some coordination calls on the COVID issue, seeing the issues from China. However, at that time, there wasn't the alarm or the, you know, the caution thrown out initially, even so. So we had a weekly update. We started discussing PPE. We identified later that week some PPE for EMS, issued that to them for, on the precaution end of the tail. We also started checking the stock that we had in place from the Ebola for both EMS, PD, and the BLS companies that we had purchased back in 2014 and checking that stock. From there, we checked the continuity plan and the pandemic annex for Newcastle County, and we started going through some of the actions. And mind you, just, you know, looking at a lot of the information that came down from WHO is they never elevated this issue to a level of a epidemic or a pandemic until we were well into the cases, the positive cases throughout the country. And therefore, the levels within our plan quickly escalated from there. So we have worked with that. The item on PPE is we initially issued those kits out to both EMS and police, working with them to help assist and funnel the shock requests down to the State Health Operations Center. We also looked at info from our vendors purchasing additional supplies. Even at that time, 3.5 weeks in, or about a month, month and a week ago, even when we were trying to early get on the front, the proactive end of it, when incidents were already rising in Washington, the supply chain had already become somewhat delayed. We were looking at 3-4 weeks, 5 weeks for supplies to come in initially on orders. The bigger cities were starting to load up on those supplies already. From there, we've worked in conjunction with Public Health and DEMA to monitor and also handle some of the task force items that they have come up with of larger challenges and issues. One being lodging of the homeless population. Worked with Carrie Casey out of Department of Community Services in her second hat as being chairman of the Housing Alliance to come up with some solutions for the homeless population. As soon as the restrictions started coming in place from the governor and from the counties and from the municipalities, we saw an impact to the homeless population throughout the county that they did not have places to go to clean themselves, go to the bathroom, or help clean up. So those were the first items that we identified. The second item we identified in conjunction with the City of Wilmington Emergency Management was the potential for
a COVID-19 positive person coming in and affecting the homeless population within the homeless shelters, and then taking out and having to evacuate an entire homeless shelter at one time. So we worked with them and the hospitals with public health to try to identify, and DHSS to identify ways that we could put lodging accommodations in place for that population, which has occurred. In addition, we've been working with FEMA to be mindful of the reimbursement process and the declaration process. The state initially asked for an emergency declaration, which only covers emergency protective measures, which are only emergency services related items, such as supplies and equipment purchased and those overtime at Backville for directly responding to an incident with COVID-19. As most of you have seen from the news, the elevation of that just last week went to a major disaster declaration. And now for the first time in the nation, historically, all 50 states and both the territories have a major disaster declaration in place awarded by the president, which has never occurred in the history. The other thing we've worked on with coordinating with my office, Chris, our planner Hodgen, is part of the volunteer organizations active in disasters. That group, the statewide VOAD, has worked with collectively with the nonprofit organizations and the religious and faith-based organizations to push information out to them through public health, and also to help coordinate some of the testing, the public testing that was done, to provide some volunteers for that, and also provide some volunteers for the feeding and the food bank items, along with the blood drive activity that's occurred with Red Cross up at the Brandywine Town Center. We initially did the PPE push, and then as the county executive office started getting some inquiries and some donations offerings, EA Dunn has taken this role over with the PPE and the coordination of some of those donations, and also working with Mr. Hanicki in the procurement area to purchase additional supplies with the, thankfully, from all council approving the emergency ordinance that went through last week. In the meantime, for us, staffing-wise, we have moved to a remote operation for the first few days of the restrictions. We were operating out of the office with social distancing, and we were setting up the EOC to be able to do remote. We can tap into the EOC, operate the video wall remotely if we need to. We can also communicate through web, through the state's activity log web EOC, and be mindful of those items that are on there. In addition, obviously, we've canceled a lot of items operationally, and we are now working vehemently on the COVID-19 operation, and also are updating, as I presented to you last month, the all-hazard mitigation plan, which is due to FEMA by tomorrow, which I'm getting ready to submit this evening or first thing tomorrow morning to them. As operational considerations, we've canceled both the CERT class that we had scheduled in March with religious and faith-based organizations over a 3-Sunday span. We canceled our co-sponsored CERT class with the City of Newark, which was scheduled for this month, the end of this month, the third week. And we are now considering and looking at the next CERT class that we had planned, which was the weekend of May 15th and 16th, just as the restriction to stay in order is set to expire. We're monitoring that one for possibly postponing that one. We're working on moving one of those classes that we canceled to the fall. The radiological exercise, graded exercise, the biannual FEMA evaluated exercise has been postponed until next year per FEMA and the state already. That was set to be done in May. So all our representatives were advised of that. In addition, I'm trying to think of the last thing that I had on here. I believe that was it as far as all the cancellations that we've had. We had a conference that was canceled, and also the state hazmat conference was also postponed until next year. Mind you, I know also the chief mentioned this week is 911 telecommunicators week. It's also severe weather preparedness week. Ironically, you know, we did have a full day yesterday of some activity overnight and through today. So thankfully, everybody made it through the storms okay, and our connections are doing well. Other than that, I'll take any questions. We're continuing to operate through the office. We're rotating through on a every other day basis with trying to keep minimal contact with everybody in the 911 center and the public safety building so that we, you know, don't cross-contaminate or get anybody in trouble there as far as being exposed or exposures. The lodging that we've also worked on is, I bring up, I kind of missed that point, was early on in the incident, it was requested from the fire service and the responders out in the field that, you know, if they came across somebody who was exposed and they weren't able to isolate them, especially a couple of fire companies that have live-ins within their fire department so they don't further expose other responders and them, that we could assist with that. And we have typically through our history for our emergency operations center representatives that come up to the EOC and are going to spend 12-hour shifts there, we go ahead and reach out for lodging accommodations for them. And so we've assisted with that over the past couple of weeks with the Claymont incident and medics being housed. And with that, I'll stop and take any questions.
Councilman Carter.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And thanks to all three of the chiefs as well for the wonderful job you guys are doing. David, the question I have is, I got a little nervous. I watched the president talking about wanting to open things up. Thank God it looks like the governors are being a lot more cautious. But I just wanted to hear how we're being involved in any discussions now about when and what the criteria for opening up is, and making sure that there's almost like some control, some veto vote if we don't feel our emergency responders are ready for the risk of a second surge. How is that playing into it? How are we planning it? How do we make sure that we get through this initial crisis that we're having a loud enough voice that we don't get thrown into this until we have any backlog of PPE filled, everything that we need in place so that, you know, if we take that risk and they begin to open up, that we are fully ready for it. And I just want to make sure that we're having a voice in that. I'm assuming it's coming through DITO and some others. I don't know if you have any information on that yet.
Yeah, so Councilman Carter, I'll touch on the communication aspect, which I kind of, I know Colonel Bond and the others kind of touched upon was, as you know, we typically always have conference calls with DEMA consistently through events. So that's one thing I did escape. As I mentioned early on, DPH and DEMA were having conference calls with the three county EOCs in the city of Wilmington early on. In addition, they've kind of elevated that. So on a weekly basis, every 3 days, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we're having a EOC conference call in the morning, which consisted of the three counties, the city of Wilmington and DEMA, to discuss those emergency management issues. Public health is on that to give us updates on public health actions that they are doing. The unique situation with this whole event versus a storm, a winter storm, a hurricane, is that this is a public health emergency and the state law is very specific as to who's in charge with that state law. So without, you know, getting deep into it, Councilman, I'll say that the lead for that comes from the doctor in charge of the Division of Public Health and the DHSS to the governor, and those recommendations on a medical standpoint go to the governor. And those decisions are being made at that level with some input. And obviously on the conference calls, the three counties in the city of Wilmington are giving our input and our communication with internally with our divisions and our departments within Newcastle County. We're giving that information to DEMA and public health on those calls. I'm not sure how much of that is getting to the governor's ear, but in addition, the governor has also been holding individual conference calls with local governments, with all the county executives and the mayors throughout this event on a frequent basis before he has initiated the actions that he has taken. So that communication is being done. On the other point that you make, the PPE and all that, we are making those communications. Like you said, those 3 days, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we communicate on a local EOC public health basis. And then on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we're having coordination calls with the entire state agencies, all the state partners across the state. We're having calls on those days. And again, that communication is going out. In addition, on Thursdays, there's one call that is all the fire chiefs and police chiefs. So as Colonel Bond has been on, there's that opportunity for the fire chiefs and the police chiefs to communicate to DEMA and DPH their concerns and for us to back them up in that, see what we're seeing in the county as in addition to what the responders are seeing.
I just ask that if at any time any of the chiefs feel that you're not being heard, You know, those of us that are elected, we get paid to yell when it's necessary. So please keep us informed. Please let us know. I have no pride. I will pick up the phone and call the governor and talk or whatever we need to do. But we got to be really careful. I know we need to open up. I knew we need to get the economy going, but there's a lot of risk there that we got to be ready for. Thank you.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that all of us listening to reports from our leadership in our public safety department, we've talked about it for years. We've watched them grow. We've watched them in their preparedness for things. And I think this unprecedented time in our history, our public safety department, when you look at not only the leadership, but all of their staff in command and all of our personnel, the outstanding job that they're doing. And each evening we hear about, and we should hear about, our medical profession, medical community in general, our doctors and nurses and everybody on the front line there. But there are no better group in my mind than our first responders. And when you look, like I say, when you look at our police, when you look at EMS, when you look at emergency management, I think they're all doing a great job. One thing that I want to highlight, because I think it is critical, and I think we all recognize and understand it, but we heard reference to Chief Miller and the 911 center. The 911 center, without a doubt, is the vital link. Always has been, always will be. And I think that following some of the activity that's been going on throughout the country and other 911 centers, not only interstate, but other centers and activity in public safety, truly our 911 center and its leadership and its personnel have been well in front of the curve. They've done things early on that a lot of other centers and a lot of other public safety agencies were not doing. So we really have to give a lot of credit, I think, to Chief Miller, his staff, and the center personnel. They're working in a confined area. They have to keep their numbers up in order to answer the citizen demand for emergency services. But all in all, I think everybody, nothing but praise and thanks. But there's also one group that we have not heard much about in this meeting, and we should be very extremely thankful on behalf of the citizens of this county, and that's our volunteer fire, rescue, and emergency medical services. As we've all heard reference made to Claymont Fire Company, they know all too well what can happen and what happens with this virus when they made a response and the public was not honest with them. And, you know, we do the best that we can do, but they were exposed unnecessarily to the virus by folks that were either afraid of telling our first responders and they were asked, or the fact that they had no other way to get emergency medical care. So I think when it comes to our first response, the front line, where the rubber meets the road, all of our public safety services is right there. I've had an opportunity, both myself, Co-Chair Street, and I spoke with Councilman Smiley the other night from Finance to try to follow it the best we could with the financial type ordinance that we passed, enabling our county executive to do the things that need to be done during this very critical time. So, Mr. Chairman, if it pleases the chair, I would hope that Kenny Dunn may be available to add some comments as to what's been expended so far and where the equipment has gone. And, you know, I'll end it with the fact that not only I think that he has done a great job working with all the divisions, but our administration, our county executive and his leadership, and this isn't a political speech, this is fact. He's done a tremendous job in working with our first responders, our communities, and working with all of us to the best of my knowledge. So I think that you know, our administration, along with our departments, deserve a tremendous amount of credit, along with this council. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask your consideration to call upon Kenny Dunn to give a report.
Is Kenny Dunn available?
Councilman Street, he's here.
Okay. That's perfectly fine with me, and I certainly want to thank him for sharing the information with us, and I've had constant contact with him and certainly appreciate all the things that he is doing throughout the county. So go ahead, Kenny.
Good afternoon, and thank you to all council and Chairman Street. As Dave Carpenter brought forward earlier, we wanted to coordinate all the donations that have been coming in and also the expenditures. When it comes to the expenditures, I'll yield to Mike Hunicki or the CAO to talk about the expenditures. I think Mike is available. I'm not sure exactly. I'm sure he's available for finance. So I'd like to just briefly go over some of the people that have donated, organizations that have donated to us. And then the spreadsheets that were sent out today show where they have all went. We're tracking every item that's coming and going, whether we've procured it through our procurement or through OEM or through donations. So the list of people that have donated, organizations, is donatede.org, which is Dave Tiberi and Richard, the Delaware Chinese American Association, BNF Towing, Henry Fenimore, who donated a skid full of gloves. Many individuals, including individual employees at Delmarva Power, who actually dropped off masks today. Chemours is donating us 2,400 N95s tomorrow we're going to pick up. We've also had some, we're calling them closet finds within the county. The general managers scoured closets throughout the county to see what was there, and we found many items that we could use, including masks. We've received from Painted Stave Distillery in Smyrna, sanitizer, hand sanitizer, from Ashland Chemical, hand sanitizer. A special shout out to Councilman Tackett for his efforts early on in getting some donations from local business owners, including the Indian Produce Market on Churchman's Road, and really helped us out in the very beginning. Just like to briefly go through some of the items and where are the other departments we've donated to. Every fire company within the county, with the exception of Townsend, Councilman Carter emailed me a little while ago, asked if we had, you know, I guess he didn't see him on the list, neither did I. I reached out to the EMS officer and the chief. They both have given me a list, Councilman, so they'll get theirs tomorrow. So every fire company in the county has received some items. Every fire company in the county has also received thermometers for their temperature monitoring program, which is mandated by public health. The following police departments have reached out and received stuff. Wilmington Police, Ellesmere Police, obviously our county police. Tomorrow we have items going to Newark Police and Middletown Police. Also, Wilmington Fire Department reached out and received many items. These items include gloves, hand sanitizer, surgical masks, N95 masks, and also you probably heard the term KN95 masks, goggles, face shields. We did find a fairly local person that reconfigured their factory to make face masks. They're up in Chester, and we've been up and picked them. We're trying to get local vendors or local people to procure these items from. Also the thermometers, the single-use sterile thermometers. Just quick numbers, face shields over 660. These numbers evolve even over the last few hours. 4,900 pairs of gloves, 610 goggles, 348 bottles of hand sanitizer, almost 2,300 N95 masks, 22,000 surgical masks, 2,700 thermometers to the fire service, and over 9,600 thermometers to the county departments themselves. The county executive and CAO, put in a program in effect that all county employees must have their temperature taken. It was piloted by Chief Miller over at the 911 center. It went very well. The employees have been very receptive, and that thermometer check has expanded to every county facility. The sheets show you the amounts that have went to each company or department within the county. If anyone knows of anybody that's needing anything, please let us know. We did get a reach out from Little Sisters of the Poor, being a nonprofit nursing facility, and I think everybody's been following the press around the tragedy that's occurred there for some surgical masks, and they did receive the surgical masks. Other than that, we have not received any other requests from other facilities. Questions? Comments?
Thank you very much, Ken.
You're welcome, sir.
We all appreciate everything that's being done and how hard you and other employees are working to get things to aid these organizations, governments, firehouses who need them. So keep up the good work, and thank you very much.
Absolutely, sir. Thank you very much.
Councilman Street. Councilman Street.
Yes, Councilman. Yes, Pro Tem Holland.
I would ask Kenny if he could comment on the support from the federal government as it relates to funds or PPE.
The federal government supplies the state stockpile. I'm sure Coordinator Carpenter can explain more on that. They fill that stockpile, and then that comes up to us. The stockpile that we're utilizing here that went out to all these departments are solely from donations from individuals and companies, and also procured by the county government. None of that that I'm aware of has actually come from the state stockpile, which would have in turn come from the federal government, sir.
All right, thank you very much.
Any other questions? I'm sorry.
This is Mike Konicki. There was a question from Councilman Bell about what was purchased. So just to, as Kenny mentioned, who we distributed to, over the past couple weeks, we purchased approximately, I'm just going to round the numbers up, 20,000 N95 and KN95 masks at the county, 89,000 surgical masks, a whole array of different size gloves and cases from medium, large, and smalls. We're working hard and trying to identify gowns and disposable gowns and lab coats are a challenge, but we finally were able to get a few on order. We have 105 inbound. So we're looking at those safety goggles, 1,500 safety goggles, which were distributed to many of the first responders. We have 5,000 boot covers, 5,000 head covers. We got 3,300 face shields, disposable face shields. In addition, from hand sanitizer, it ranges from gallon jugs to small 16, 18 ounce units. It's about 7,100 units there. Thermometers and disinfectants. We have an array of disinfectants, some ready-made, some are high concentrate to be diluted that'll be given to departments that need. We also got the spray bottles that make it easy for them to spray it on and with disposable towels, shop towels, wipe it off. We also purchased some technology working on, we put an order in with Dell for 250 laptops along with the supporting equipment for that so we can further mobilize the county and take some of the real old laptops that we put into service, get them out of service to just shore up and maintain a safe safe, consistent operation.
Thank you very much for that update. Any other questions, comments from council? Councilman Smiley.
Motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Hold on, Councilman. I think Kenny Dunn had another comment he wanted to make.
Second motion to adjourn.
just briefly, you just heard from Mike Konicki. This effort could not have been handled in the fashion it was without Michael and his group there. Special shout out to Michael, Ruth, and Cliff Crawford in his section there. We've been on the phone constantly. Thank you, guys.
Is there a second on the motion?
One more. Hold on, Councilman Street.
I think your co-chair wants to talk again.
Mr. Honicki has a comment.
No, I hit the button. I was taking it down. Sorry, ma'am.
It's okay.
I think Councilman Bell has something else.
Councilman Bell?
Just a quick question, Mr. Chairman, and this would go to the assistance of Councilman Smiley as one of the chairs of finance. And both co-chairs of finance, as I've mentioned before, do an excellent job. but I think one of the questions should be asked, and nobody is better to turn around, not only ask, but make it happen, as George, is the funding at this point enough to continue supporting their initiatives? So I would ask that, you know, Councilman Smiley work with us on that one as far as any additional ordinances or any additional funding.
Well, quickly, we have another emergency ordinance tonight for another million. So we're about through the first million. We have another emergency ordinance that will be on the agenda tonight. Councilman Cartier will be handling it under the emergency ordinances. I do want to say that this is not putting our budget at risk. I know a lot of people don't worry about that, but the funding has to come from somewhere. Because we've had some unusually large property transfers, which increased our RTT, which increased our reserve account. Now, I'm not optimistic enough to believe that we will receive any federal reimbursement in FY 2020, but we were fine with the budget. We have enough reserves. If we need to go back to the well again, we will be able to go back there to keep the funding going, to keep the emergency services and all the needs of the citizens of Newcastle County and our personnel covered. I'm very comfortable with that.
All right, and we've got an hour and 10 minutes left to get to the Finance Committee meeting and then get to council. So unless there's something pressing, I'll take the second motion for adjournment.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Okay, finance will meet in 5 minutes. Take a little break.
Thank you.